don't have that dedication, their role in this has to be one of support. In other words, we can help people that want to go in to a limited number of cases, and right now the tray is full. You know, we'd love to help everybody with every case, but we do need that kind of support. We need people that will help us raise money so that we can afford to generate the paperwork and do all the support things that go with this. It's there's a lot of other things you can do besides learn. If you have trouble learning, you have trouble reading, but you see the issue is important, there are things that we can do. We can monitor the court, sit down there and just take reports about what's going on in the courtroom. Our first victory for the Illegal Paralegal Services Club was in the traffic court. They used to sit down there with the air ducts blowing overhead and conduct business up against the bench. And the people that were sitting back there rarely had an opportunity to find out what was happening to people.
Because it was so noisy.
It was so noisy and there were no microphones. We wrote to the clerk of the court, Christine Patton, and pointed out to her that the Brown Act says that public meetings are public, which means that we're not only supposed to be able to attend, but we're supposed to be able to hear what's going on, and requested that they put microphones in the traffic court. And lo and behold, without so much as a blink of the eye or one single bit of protest, we now have microphones down in the traffic court. I have not been back to monitor their effectiveness, but I've been assured that they are in working order. That is the first step. Again, everything step by step. That is the first step to starting to record those proceedings. Once they have the microphones in place, which they now have, then getting to put a tape recorder in there is just a matter of another move so that we can start to keep track of what's going on. Because if the citizens watch what's going on in the courts and report it and store it and save it and talk about it, all that behavior is going to come back and bite these people. But it's the paper trail we've got to build. It's the performance trail we have to build. It's the history that we have to build before we can come back and make a scene.
So if you want to help build that and possibly talk to the builder, one of the builders, give a call to 427-3772, which is Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's the station you are listening to, 96.3 FM, and the line is open. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, a three-hour, twice-weekly show, Mondays and Fridays from 10 to 1, and sometimes longer and sometimes shorter. And I finally been able to corral Renegade Richard Quigley, and that's the man you're listening to on the air, Richard Quigley, who has been talking to you about verified complaints, the DMV's overstepping the corruption of the courts, and the importance of citizens taking a long, patient, principled stand in dealing with the kind of judicial hogwash that we have to deal with every day. Richard, is there any more you want to add? You've been going for about 50 minutes, and maybe I know you could go on for a longer period, but I think we may have been kind of covering the issues that I at least brought up. Is there anything you want to add?
No, the only thing that I'd like to, I think about the only thing that I'd like to point out in closing, you introduced me by the fact that I wear this United States Freedom Fighter t-shirt, which is an expression of an attitude. There's no such organization, and I hope that nobody would ever try to form one. But heads up, paying attention. I think that the people that listen to this radio station need a little direction as to how to address these problems. I mean, in general. Specifically, it's just a matter of learning. And as I have time to teach, I'll make myself available to do that. The things that I know, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, whether what I do is good or bad. I have a lot of belief in it. I think that we're on track to make some changes. I think that changes happen locally. I think that we can if we can get these courts in this county and the administrators in these county to act right, then I think that the problems that are happening on a national level and a rural level will by virtue of what I call the synergistic energy will take care of themselves. I think a lot of times that we become impotent because we take on issues that are too grand a scale and are too hard for one or two or five people to affect. But if you have in a county, for example, judges that understand their oath of office and interact with the law in a way that is consistent with what the founding fathers had, if you have a sheriff who does Yeah, he's the chief law enforcement officer. I'm going to tell you, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the FBI, whether it's DEA, doesn't matter. They come in here and start messing with the rights of individual citizens, and you got a sheriff that won't put up with that. He can run them out. He's the ultimate authority, believe me. As unreasonable as that may sound, it really is. And right now we got a new guy in there, and I'm hopeful. I mean, I know he's probably offended a lot of people, but he's also done a lot of real good stuff, I think, so far.
This is Sheriff Mark. Let's have a curfew for the young Tracy.
Well, I didn't. I said it wasn't perfect. But it's a learning curve, and I actually think that the foundation of the guy is real good. But you got to remember, he's been some number of a couple of score of years, getting that bureaucratic view. And when I ran for sheriff last year, it was kind of entertaining dealing with Mark, because we certainly were not kindred spirits. But before the movie was over, I think that I'd learned something about him, and I think he'd learned a little bit about me and folks like me and you and some of the other folks in the community. And I've seen some things that he's done that are very hopeful to me. The bench in this county, a recall across the board is probably the best idea we could come up with. There's one or two down there that are salvageable, in my opinion, and of course my opinion is not what runs recalls. When they did the recall campaign on Danner, I originally wanted to do that for a recall of everybody. I wanted to throw all the judges' names on there, Danner's name on there, and go and find out what the community was willing to support from the bench. That never materialized. It's probably much too big a venture, but that would be the way to do it. Keep an eye on your judges. Remember, you can vote for them. We can do a lot of damage at the polls. We can do a lot of damage in the courtrooms. And I'm talking about damage to the bureaucratic malfeasance. I'm not talking about damage to individuals or damage to property. I'm talking about destroying that bureaucratic malfeasance, which underpins all of these problems. And other than that, you know, keep a good attitude. Keep your head down and keep trucking is all I know to say. I'm no expert. I ain't no sage. I only know what I know, you know.
Hey. And in this case, it's Just Say No, KNOW. And if you want to get in touch with Richard after this, and it looks like you're getting restless and it's sort of heading for the...
Need a cigarette.
Heading for, the tobacco alley. not in here, you bad boy.
Yeah, I know.
Uh-huh.
Not even in places where it ought to be okay.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about that at the next show, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, I can see you promoting, smokers' rights in public buildings. I can see it all now.
Yes, well, smoking certain kinds of substances, I am much in favor of. But
I like tobacco. I really do like tobacco. Sometime when you got time to think about it, would you explain to me, Bob, figure it out. Now, I realize that it's probably a real simplistic view, but it occurs to me that most, if not all, of the world's problems, when you sit there and you look at them and look at them and look at them, the base of them comes from the fact that there are too many people on the planet. Now, I'm not advocating going out and killing a bunch of people. I just find it an interesting dynamic that all of this stuff really is born of the fact there's too many people on the planet. We bump into one another. We need more room. Don't have enough food. Don't have enough land. I mean, too many people on the planet. And in that arena, it doesn't make sense to me that what we have for our number one national obsession is the preservation of life. To me, there's a conflict there, a basic conflict. But
so you think that you tobacco smokers are really doing us all a good turn by getting ready to check out early, so to speak?
Well, I don't know. Life kills you, man. I don't know anybody that ever died that wasn't alive first. So I guess life kills you. So if you want to ban things that causes death, let's start with life. Let's just ban life and move from there. I mean, sugar kills you. You want it, the most addictive, most destructive drug that was ever known to man, sugar. Anybody run around and tell nobody not? I mean, they ain't got no laws against doing sugar. And you want to know what kills people, man, is stress. And stress is when you're standing there minding your own goddamn business and some asshole's yelling at you because of what you got hanging out of your mouth. None of your business. You're killing me with the stress. Go away.
I'm going to give Richard a back rub here on the air.
What does that say? He handed me a note and I can't read it.
So we have a note from another secret admirer here. Revolution versus restoration. We have a request. Reformation. You were talking restoration, though, I guess. That's what he was talking.
Well, that's what it says, restoration.
Reformation. Reformation was a religious movement.
What does that say?
Reformation, actually.
Oh, you want to know the difference? You want me to explain the difference?
Yes. We have a request. It's actually a walk-in request rather than a call-in. But we do still have a phone number, 427-3772. Help, help, give us a call. But in the meantime, what is the difference?
Well, it seems to me like revolution is when you run and grab your gun and they run and grab their guns, and the point of that one being real simple. They got more than we do. Restoration has to do with, excuse me, the revolution's been fought and won. How about everybody just do their job?
Okay.
You know, it's a whole lot more peaceable, and nobody gets hurt, nobody gets injured, nothing gets destroyed. And it doesn't make sense to destroy what you want left. I mean, what good does it do to blow up a building if that building is capable of generating some good work? How about going in there and just tearing down the inefficiencies, you know, and scoot them out the door, leave the building alone? Restoration, it's peaceable, it's productive, and it gives people a real hard time to sit back there and badmouth you for your violent ways. Nobody ever got injured in a restoration.
Well, there we have it. For those of you students who are not following that, Professor Quigley will be available at a future time to possibly his text will be coming out soon, probably not. But
thanks for your help. I'm going outside to smoke.
All right.
You guys keep listening. These guys, there's a few neurotics on the air, but most of them wrap pretty tight.
Hey, so there you have it. A satisfied speaker, a satisfied listener, and an addicted tobacco man. You are listening to Bathrob Spiel's Broadsides, twice weekly civil rights show. All lines are open, 427-3772. I'm going to put on a bit of an interview that happened a couple days ago, but I think is quite pertinent, with an activist called No Guns. She's also known as Antoinette Radici. She's been around here for years. She's fought in numerous peaceful causes. We'll let her speak for herself. She was harassed at the farmer's market by the farmer's market management for displaying jewelry at her free speech table. Coming up, the interview with No Guns.
Hello, it's October 25th, 1985. I'm in the Catalyst about 8:35 with a white-garbed No Guns who is in front of a nice-looking salad, but the story she has may not be so nice. So what's cooking, No Guns?
Well, last week I was back at the market, and you had interviewed me the week before as an incident that had happened at the market.
And for our listeners, can you kind of briefly say what that incident was?
The incident was that I was doing my free speech table, and I happened to have my beadwork out as, you know, for donations. It got resolved with police, who said that if I had a note that said donations only, you know, that it wasn't like selling in that sense.
I mean, initially you were told to leave the farmer's market because of your donation table, because of your beadwork?
Yes, by whoever the young man is who's been hired by the market to make sure that people like myself are not there. I'm the questionable person because I merged the free market with the free speech. And that is really something that they haven't really dealt with in the courts. So they wouldn't arrest me. They said all I had to do was have the note, and they left me alone. So
You put the note donations
on
your beadwork table, which was on Lincoln Street at the Wednesday afternoon farmer's market.
Right.
A couple weeks ago.
So then last week I came to the market, and I came early. It was like 2-ish. I was just going to set up early, and I was doing some crochet, so I was just going to hang there. And right away, that young man came up to me. Now, he looks like he should be a brother. Seems nice enough, looks good, but I like, you know, long hair, bearded, you know, way cool, but mean-spirited.
This is the same fellow who earlier, the week before, had told you to move the table or he would call the police, and did in fact call the police.
And the police told him to leave me alone. That was perfectly legal. So he starts right into me telling me I can't be there, he's going to have barricades up because his truck is going to park there. I said, well, I want to wait and see if the truck's going to park here. That made him kind of mad. And I went over to the side and leaned my bike on that metal thing that's there. He pushed my bike. He said if I set my table up, he was going to throw it. Then
an athletic man showing his prowess.
Yes, it was quite strange. And then, of course, what I want to say to the community and the reason that I'm talking to the notorious Robert right now is because we need to question why in a progressive community we're going to hire someone that will deal with things in this way. He also at one point in the altercation said to me very, very intensely into my face, he says, closer to me than I am to you, Robert, really barking, came on like a pit bull. It was scary. He said, you better watch what you're saying or you're going to get shot. Now, I don't like being talked to like that because I'm a paranoid girl. I've been political in the streets for a long time. I've had a knife at my throat. I've had real stuff happen. So when someone says like that, it might just be off the top of their head and like the blue, but I have to begin to wonder who that person is and why we are hiring people like that. Now, we've got a lot of kids on the street. We're going to have a difficult winter. Jerry Garcia has passed. We're going to have more than our fair share of people even older than me who have done nothing all their life but follow the dead. Do we want a mean and unkind situation as we move into this winter? We've got to work this out. It's got to be softer. Obviously, I talk to a lot of people. I called conflict resolution. I didn't even know how affected I was till I got home to my tent that night and found myself crying. Now, I'm a 47-year-old woman. I've been on the street a long time. I had an abusive father. I've been punched. I can take stuff like that. I didn't even realize how much it affected me. That energy is not acceptable in this community, and it's half of the problem. Now, if the cops came off nice, They were very cool. I kept saying, let's arrest me. Let's deal with it in the court. They said, no. So why am I being harassed? I told him when he first came up and started harassing me, I said, I thought the police told you that I was legal to leave me alone. He said, I'm not going to.
Do you have this man's name?
I don't have his name, but he was hired. He is who's in charge at the market. What I would like us to begin to find out is, why is he behaving this way? Could he do his job in a kinder, loving way? Or could we hire somebody else to do this job?
And you want people concerned with offering support or advice to give you a contact number?
I'm at my table on Wednesday, and I think we should do everything right
out
front.
He kicks you out, of course.
Well, I'm there. I brought my camera. I would have loved to have had a tape recorder because I would like some of these things that he's, if he's going to do this again, we should record this because I can't prove that he said some of those things.
There were no witnesses other than you.
There were some witnesses to some of the things. He seemed to wait till every time people left was when I got under another attack. When there were people around, the only thing that he really did when people were around, he came over, I said, well, you know, we might have to move some of these barricades that you put up. He said, you touch those and it's a felony. I said, oh, God. So I set my table next to the barricade. He came over, picked up one of the barricades, set it in front of my table and said, I told you not to touch these. Now, folks, I'm saying that's kind of like psychological trip. It's not fair or right or kind to lay a psychological operation trip on anyone, even for fun.
Did any of the nearby people at the market support you?
No, they seemed to support him. They seemed to think that he was doing his job and that it was perfectly okay to treat someone like that.
Really?
Now, I don't understand why any man in this community would watch another man behave like that and think it's okay. If we are going to be a quote-unquote progressive community, I can imagine that in a very fascistic community that the men would think that's cool.
Did he call the police again?
Yes, he really worked hard. It took him all day to get a cop over. And the policeman came at the end of the day, and he said, watched me for a real long time, and then he finally came forward, because I told Theodore and people, I said, don't leave, because this cop is going to come forward this minute you go. So she stayed, even though she didn't want to go. She did stay, and then he came over, and he says, what's it about? I explained to him what happened. I explained to him what happened the week before. He said, look, I don't know what the law is. He said, I'll talk to the sergeant. Maybe you'll be down today or next week. So this week I came with the camera. I came with stuff. I told all kinds of people. I called conflict resolution. I did everything I could, and he never approached me. But there were four other tables up today.
So in other words, this incident with the police officer was a week ago, and the incident with the barricades and the abusive was this week, today.
No.
It was a week ago.
A week ago was the barricades, and the week before that was the week that you did that other interview with me.
And what happened today, then?
Today, nothing happened. We had four activist tables out, and he never approached the tables. I'm hoping that conflict resolution people talk to him, that one of the many people I talked to him.
Was he in and about the market?
I did see him, but he never came over where we were.
You heard that he's harassed anybody else in the market?
I know that he is the one that is harassing people like myself, anyone who went to a market.
And have you heard of any such harassment today?
I didn't hear of any today. But I would like us as a community to watch it. And I think to approach him as if he is a brother. You know, no one has to approach him as loaded as I have to, because I'm fighting with him, obviously. Fighting back is what I'd like to say. I don't feel like I'm fighting with him. I feel like I was under attack and I'm fighting back.
I think you are fighting back. Now, Gonzalez, in 1988, on December 13th, at what we hope will one day be called Linda Edwards Day, by proclamation, the support of the right of Linda Edwards to serve people free food in front of City Hall, and then, of course, were taken away in a stranglehold by Sergeant St. Armand.
Yes, he did put me to chokehold, but I was snapping, and I did get a little bad behavior. I saw my son by the other policeman. I thought he was going to hurt my son's arm or break his arm. And so, without even realizing it, I didn't even realize a policeman has got me by the throat, and here I am kicking the other policeman. There was no activist saying, no guns. Could you calm down? I mean, girl, you're going to get hurt.
We were concentrating on the suit.
Yes, I know. But this is where we need, when we need to be there for one another, because even with all the nonviolent role playing I'd had, I totally snapped, and I was kicking the cop. So St. Ange put me in a chokehold because he probably thought, the girl's going out.
You're doing it for your own good,
oh,
no gun.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt, because the guy, karma got him, obviously.
You should probably know that tomorrow, on Thursday, October 26th, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless will be having its board of directors meeting. This is the group that has decided to evict 200 homeless people from the open-air shelter on November 1st in order to set up a community house, which is a low-rental set of trailers from Stanford that can facilitate 40 people as part of their long-time project for transitional housing.
I'd like to see a teepee village. I have my teepee, and I wish the community would let me set it up near one of the homeless gardens, and I would commit to do that experiment, live there for a year, watch it.
A brief clarification on something that was said in this interview. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which I'm going to report on later in the show, is actually planning the eviction to begin. It actually won't begin in any way as an eviction. It will begin as a movement of people into the armory when the armory winter shelter opens on a weather-related basis. But in fact, the 200 people who will be using the field will not have the option to use the field next April under the current Citizens Committee for the Homeless plan. Instead, there will be 40 or 50 paying people who will be in low-income trailers donated by Stanford. More of a report on this later. We continue with the interview with No Guns.
Watch what we could really do, and then let us have a village. I think that's more freedom. Because if people could own their tent, or their yurt, or their teepee, and we could get cloth, and we could sew them, we'd be more free.
I agree. I think you should put that into a plan and propose it to Mayor Byers, however acute it.
I have been working on it, and I'm hoping that before the year's out or early part of next year, I can have something really down. Because I want to, if we got the village, I would commit to 5 years. I would not leave the village for 5 years. Someone else could shop for me. I'll grow my garden. But I really think that this is the solution.
We should say, for the benefit of our audience, that No Guns is a woman who has raised her son under the freeways and has essentially been a living outdoors for much of her adult life. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. And I think that I have the PhD of tent living and how you could keep it together and look like you rent a house. I mean, I bucket bathe. Most of the time it's cold water. I have to admit, every now and again I steal a bucket of hot water from my friends. I know I'm supposed to use cold, but hey, some mornings it is so cold, folks. And so I've been bucket bathing all these years that I've been in this community, living outside. And I finally learned how how many kale plants I need, how many onions. Last year I ate 300. I put them in myself and ate them.
There you have it. The ecology of the underprivileged, or perhaps, underprivileged. Anything you want to add for the free radio audience, No Guns?
Let's keep free radio alive. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, No Guns.
Well, it's a few minutes. And that was an interview from 2 days ago in the Catalyst in the Evening, speaking to activist No Guns, Antoinette Radici, a peace activist who lives outside and distributes literature at the farmer's market from her table, and was harassed there by an employee of the farmer's market several weeks ago, 2 weeks running, but apparently not this last Wednesday. But if you are at the farmer's market next Wednesday, keep an eye open for No Guns. It's on Lincoln Street. When they close off that street, she's unmistakable. She's dressed from head to toe in white. She's a short woman. She's in her 40s. Give her a look, and do support her, and be near if she begins to be harassed by misguided farmers market people. Farmers market people's employees have had a checkered history in my book. I'm a great supporter of the farmers market. I'm sorry they moved off Pacific Avenue, apparently under pressure from the merchants, and I think it was a mistake. In Berkeley, the presence of lots of stands and tables up and down Telegraph Avenue actually, I think, helps the businesses, doesn't detract from them, but the kind of petty jealousies and short-sighted attitudes that some merchants have tend to make it a difficult thing to counter here in Santa Cruz, or to start here in Santa Cruz, as say a real daily market where people can vend their wares as they have in Berkeley and in other cities. I think Boulder, Colorado may have a similar situation. Maybe Eugene has something similar. Actually, those two cities, I believe, had the same architect designing the mall as our Pacific Garden Mall, when it was the Pacific Garden Mall. So, No Guns at the farmer's market. Keep an eye out for her. We have interviews coming up. We may even have a special live guest, the vicious Dick Crow, who is in the studio. Dick is an expert in non-monogamy as well as in living on the streets. Crow is the man whose little girl was denied restroom privileges at the food court about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he may have gone in for a mediation on that. Have you done any mediation on that, Crow?
No,
no mediation? Have you called them up? Or?
No, I don't even go there anymore.
So Crow no longer takes a crap in the food market, nor does his little girl. One might say a spiritual loss to the food court. But if you, in fact, have been finding yourselves discriminated against in the downtown... wait, we have an incoming call. Let's hold up on the discrimination and see what the call is.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, good morning, Robert.
It sounds like Red Top Robert Flory.
It is.
Sometime homeless activist and sometime homely activist.
Something like that.
I
wanted to comment on what you were saying earlier, what Richard was saying earlier. I made a comment that, or he made a statement that the state of California, presumably other states, tell you that driving is a privilege, not a right, that you don't have a right to drive, that it's a privilege. And my perspective on this was that, this is an attitude as if people drive for fun or something, but... a lot of people don't drive for fun. They drive because it's a necessity of life, and it's the only way they can make it from their house to the store to buy their food and to carry the food back to their house. Or maybe they commute to work, and they have to have an income to exist in society as it is, and so they really don't have much choice but to drive 50 or 100 miles to work every morning. Perhaps they don't live where they work. And hundreds and hundreds of people drive for this reason and for other reasons as well. And in fact, it is virtually impossible to exist in society as it is today with roads everywhere without driving on those roads. That's just the architecture of the structure of our society makes it a necessity to drive. But then they come in and they say, well, driving is a privilege, not a right, as if people, had some other way of existing.
I think that was one of Richard's points, that they're claiming that, you can walk anywhere you want or maybe ride your horse, And in fact, the layout of cities is such that even the planning department does not allow, you know, the placement of facilities in a neighborhood within walking distance.
Right, so that strikes me as a catch-22 situation.
Well, I think I would agree with that.
Part of the Department of Motor Vehicles has got a catch-22 going there. Also, as far as Arcata goes,
Arcata is the town where Prudnot Bombs is being threatened with contempt of court charges on November 7th, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be at the Eureka Courthouse at 8:30 in the morning.
Do you know if anybody's planning a caravan to go north?
Well, there were two messages, email messages that came in late last night, or actually I guess yesterday afternoon sometime. I don't know if you'd seen those or not, but they're both from Emmanuel of East Bay Food Not Bombs, who has been up in Arcata for the past few weeks helping them up there. And he says that rides definitely will be leaving from East Bay Food Not Bombs on Monday the 6th to go up to Arcata.
Mm-hmm.
Is one thing that he says.
What pickup spot?
And actually, he doesn't give any details. He just says leaving from East Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who wanted to get in on that will probably have to contact East Bay Food Not Bombs.
What about locally, for those in Santa Cruz who want to get up there? I know I'm interested in going, and I may be taking people in my vehicle, though I don't have a lot of space, maybe for two or three at most. Do you know anybody who's planning a caravan?
As far as I know, you're in charge of that effort.
I see. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. There was a Food Not Bombs meeting last night. I understand you're a kind of an eminence grise, a retired Food Not Bombs worthy who has been observing from a distance Food Not Bombs' failing attempts to do its meals here in Santa Cruz. I understand the Tuesday meal, for instance, did not happen. But is anybody at the house there who can give a report on what happened at the Food Not Bombs meeting in Santa Cruz last night?
Possibly, but I think they're in the shower.
I see. Well, tell them to...
I wasn't at the meeting, of course. And I don't know if they discussed Arcata or not.
Get them to towel down and give a call into the station with a progress report. And we're talking Candlelight Kim Argula here, I believe.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead. By the way, for your information, we do also have an interview with your old-time colleague, Wonton Dave Jacobs, coming up probably within the next 20 minutes.
Oh, excellent. That was a question I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
But more on Arcata here. This one message here says, incidentally, Arcata Mayor Victor Schwab has stated, quote, "We're not going to arrest people at the servings. We're going to arrest them in their homes," end quote. And the people were served... Their court summons in their homes as well.
At least one of them. I also have an interview with Rahula of Arcata Food Not Bombs, which we also hope to be playing later in the show, talking about what's happening up in Arcata. But go ahead.
Well, there was that, and then the other thing that was in this message was that apparently Arcata Food Not Bombs does not have an attorney. It says.
Well, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs doesn't have an attorney either, as far as I know. Of course, we're not under attack at the moment.
Well, that's true, but where did it say that?
It's true, they don't have an attorney. That's what they also mentioned in the interview. In fact, they're looking desperately for an attorney. They have an attorney that they're firing, is actually what the specific is. The attorney that they have used has suggested to them that they surrender themselves, and he didn't like his advice. So they're dumping him.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, here it is. It says, the other thing that makes it worse, and they mean worse than the San Francisco situation, is that they yet do not have an attorney to represent them. So if you have built up a legal defense, they're working on this, or if you know an attorney willing to come up on the 7th and represent them, please forward them the following phone number, and there's a phone number here.
Why don't you give out that phone number again, just for the hell of it?
That phone number is for a person named Rodney, and it's area code 707-822-4613.
707-822-4613. Okay.
And I just wanted to put that out over the air so maybe there are some attorneys listening or somebody who knows an attorney that the Arcata people have a court date for November 7th and they need an attorney.
And they probably can pay him in carrots and cauliflower.
Something like that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good. Hmm. What I'd like you to do, Robert, is when you've heard the Wanton Dave interview, perhaps you could call in again if you feel so moved, if you have any thoughts or comments or additions you want to add, or possibly you want to denounce Wanton Dave as the retired troublemaker that he is. You could do that.
All right, Robert, I'll probably do that.
Cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was retired activist Red Top Robert Flory, who for many months with Wanton Dave Jacobs maintained a peace vigil at the town clock back in 1991 during the Iraqi genocide, as I call it. And when the police began to harass people, continued essentially as a protest against police abuse. And Robert has been in and out of the courts recently, serving a weekend in jail for, quote, contempt, because of his contention that you do not have to do community service. He refused to do community service for a sleeping ban. Actually, it wasn't a sleeping ban ticket. I believe it was, it was a number of tickets, one of which was the 4th of July ticket. Last 4th of July, he set up a demonstration on the sidewalk, a small structure that did not block the sidewalk. But after dark, every structure on the sidewalk is illegal, thanks to the new anti-homeless downtown ordinances passed by our liberal Santa Cruz City Council. That was Red Top Robert Flory, and more about him later. Maybe he'll be calling back. And Wanton Dave, actually Wanton Dave is next on the agenda, as fate would have it. I have this interview right here, just about ready to roll. I'm going to stick her in the machine. Before I do a few words of introduction to those of you who don't know who Wanton Dave Jacobs is, I introduce him briefly in the interview, but Wanton Dave, if you've been around Santa Cruz, you probably know him. He used to wear a rather colorful bathrobe. He's a man who lived outdoors. You could frequently find him downtown, sometimes near the Java House, which eventually, soon after, actually within months after his arrival, he was barred from the Java House because he smoked a joint half a block away, and a planning commissioner complained. The head of the Java House, I believe Kevin, one of the co-owners, who I now call Kick 'Em Out Kevin, decided Dave had to leave the Java House because he was giving him a bad name, even though this marijuana incident happened outside. And Kevin is a notorious marijuana smoker, you know, likes to be a would-be pretender to the hip scene. I don't know if he's a notorious marijuana smoker, but he's certainly, grass has been smoked in the Java House after hours. I have been reliably told. Yeah, it should be. I mean, marijuana is no big deal in Santa Cruz. It shouldn't be any big deal. We should have a rational stance on that. But Dave was evicted, and he's been evicted ever since. They refused to let him in. I attempted to mediate that situation. And eventually, for my trouble, I was evicted and finally arrested when I walked into the Java House one day and had to do a trespass case that lasted 6 months. And so for those of you who are patrons of the Java House, you might ask them if Wanton Dave Jacobs and Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse are still under threat of arrest if they enter that establishment. But Wanton Dave Jacobs, let's get back to him. Dave Jacobs has been involved in so many court cases involving the rights of poor people in the last 3 or 4 years that it's quite impressive. He was arrested across the street from the Java House. When he sat down on the sidewalk, police demanded he move, even though he wasn't blocking the sidewalk. This was before the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws, about a year and a half before. He said, no, I don't see that I'm causing any problem. I sat down next to him in solidarity. He was hauled away by the police, and they refused to arrest me. And finally, in a situation later where the court was reviewing that case, Judge Kelly, or Kangaroo Kelly, as I call him playfully, took the entire court out onto the sidewalk to investigate the scene of the, quote, crime. And he found immediately that because Jacobs was only taking up less than a third of the sidewalk, he could not possibly be described as blocking the sidewalk across from the Java House downtown, and the case was dismissed. Dave has been arrested dozens of times, or at least certainly cited dozens of times, and probably arrested at least a dozen times, if not more, in some of the cases you will hear described in this upcoming interview with Dave. Most recently, he faced a court date, a same court date that Robert Flory faced, but did not reappear in town, and is under judicial warrant. Again, these are the warrants that issue from trivial tickets, such as sleeping at night, or which police still ticket under the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, jaywalking, sitting on the sidewalk, asking for spare change peacefully after dark, things of that sort. So let's hear a little of the... Well, before we do, I have in the studio with me a renowned outdoor liver himself, and outdoor lover as well, a lover of the outdoor and a lover in the outdoors, Crow, who I playfully call Dick Crow, for his impersonations of Dick on the phone. What that means is we were doing a survey on non-monogamy some shows ago, and actually one of the women requested people call in if they were interested in associating in an erotic manner. The neurotic and a playful Crow here called in and, of course, made a joking, concealed, pseudonymous offer to join in playfully with this woman. However, as far as I know, that relationship was never consummated, or was it, Crow?
No. I didn't want to be a dick.
I see. So, you knew Wanton Dave, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of knowing Wanton Dave because... he showed me many times how to get into the law library and dig into law information to protect my rights as a human being, because as individual human beings, if you do not know your law, which is going to a law library and looking into the laws to defend yourself, you will be persecuted to the fullest extent of the law, unlike O.J. Simpson, which he probably didn't have to spend a dime going to the law library, because he had to pay all the lawyers that, you know.
Well, that is a good point. Dave Jacobs, aside from costing the city, I would say hundreds of thousands of dollars,
yes,
at least, in legal costs, because of the city's stupid and stubborn insistence on pursuing him on these small, petty offenses simply to harass him, and perhaps to intimidate others who might learn by his example. He was a master of, he spent great amounts of time dealing with the law and the law library. Indeed, it was a writ of habeas corpus, which Dave Jacobs wrote up himself, that got Robert Flory out of jail several years ago, when he was jailed improperly by Judge Make-It-Up-As-You-Go Heather Morse, a Watsonville worthy, who jailed him without a hearing and without an attorney. And Red Top Robert was able to get a rare writ of habeas corpus, which means that they pull you out of jail and take you before a judge to see if there's ample cause for you to be there, or before a magistrate, as Renegade Richard Quigley was describing it about an hour ago. Anyway, it was Dave Jacobs who was able to put together that writ, and it was a successful writ. And Dave has done other things, many other things, to help poor people to understand the law and contest the unjust ordinances here in Santa Cruz that affect homeless people. But enough of me. Let's hear from Dave Jacobs and this interview that happened yesterday.
It's October 26th. We're calling Wanton Dave.
Okay, I'm on the line to Wanton Dave Jacobs, a peace and civil rights activist who spent a number of years in Santa Cruz on the streets of the city, fighting essentially for the rights of poor people to be able to exist and live there. And this is how I saw it. And Dave had many a court battle in Santa Cruz court, successfully winning quite a number of them, which I'm going to ask him to detail. I always do when I get him on the line for an interview. Dave, can you kind of summarize, well, how things were in Santa Cruz for you, the kind of, you were in Santa Cruz from what, 1991 through 1995, right?
Yeah.
And you originally came to town in the midst of the Iraqi genocide,
Well, right when the bombing of Iraq started, right before the bombing of Iraq started, I arrived in Santa Cruz.
And then you decided to stay and make your stand at the town clock.
Well, I was invited to participate in the peace ritual that was ongoing at the town clock 24 hours a day continuously during the war in Iraq. bombing of the Iraqi people. And then because of the police repressions that took place during that vigil, I ended up remaining in Santa Cruz to
deal with
I was charged on many criminal counts because of that vigil, and I needed to remain in Santa Cruz to win those court cases.
In fact, weren't most of those charges petty charges designed to drive you away from your peace vigil at the town clock?
Well, yeah. All of them, including the misdemeanor charges, were designed to try and drive me and the other people that were doing the vigil at the town block away.
But during this period of time, isn't it true that the Santa Cruz City ordinances and police practice made it, in effect, illegal for poor people who slept outside or in their vehicles to be asleep at night after 11 o'clock?
Well, Santa Cruz law makes it illegal for anyone to be asleep after 11 o'clock outside of a lawful residence.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're poor or rich, you know. I know of one case where a woman that was visiting a woman that lived in San Jose was visiting a friend in Santa Cruz with a couple of her kids. And, as she started to drive back, there was a malfunction in her vehicle, and it was late at night. And, she was in an inconvenient area to try and get to a telephone or do anything about the car situation, and so she opted to lock the doors and sleep in the vehicle with her kids, and she was awakened by the police, and they were given tickets.
Now, you received numerous tickets under Ordinance 6.36.010 of the city camping ban?
Yeah.
And those tickets were not necessarily designed to punish you for having a messy campsite, but actually designed, you think, to drive you from political protest.
Well, every